This is Anya Leonard, the co-founder of Classical Wisdom, a website dedicated to bringing ancient wisdom to modern minds. This month's podcast with professors is with Sonia Nevin, affiliated lecturer in ancient history at the Faculty of Education at the University of Cambridge, and author of The Idea of Marathon, Battle in Culture, of which we'll be speaking about today.
So with regards to your book, I'd like to just discuss the idea of marathon. And I think the concept of the book is really interesting because it's not just the battle and its consequences, but it's sort of the idea of the battle and how that sort of affects later time periods and also in the ancient world. But in our current society, as we were just saying before, people are a little bit less familiar with the Battle of Marathon. If anything, the Battle of Thermopylae is probably a little bit more in the modern conscience. So for us to begin, I think it would be really handy for everybody to get a quick recap and maybe a quick summary of the Battle of Marathon.
Absolutely. The Battle of Marathon is really one of the great clashes of the wars between the ancient Greeks and the ancient Persians. And the battle takes place, it's on the east coast of mainland Greece, and we are in the year 490 BCE. And for about more than 50 years before that, around 50 years before that, the Persian Empire is expanding out of its base in southern Iran. And it expands to include what we would call modern Afghanistan, Iraq, Turkey, into Africa, into Europe, around the Black Sea. But in 490, the Persians lead a fleet across the Aegean Sea, and they successfully attack some of the Greek islands, but they are then repulsed by an army of Athenians and Plataeans on the plain of Marathon. And the Persians would not then invade Greece for another 10 years. And it's in that later phase, 10 years later, that we get the battles of Thermopylae and Plataea in the second wave of the Persian Wars. And for the Persians, it's a frustrating setback, but perhaps not that big a deal. But for the Athenians, it gives them a huge boost of confidence, and it becomes a really defining event in their sense of self and their sense of who they are as a people.
So it really was a pivotal moment with regards to the history of ancient Greece, but it's much more so for the Athenians than any of the other major city-states in ancient Greece.
Yes, that would be fair. It's hugely important to the Athenians, largely because they are the main people fighting that battle. But straight away, they are thinking, well, we have saved ourselves, but perhaps we have saved all of Greece as well. And it's a little bit difficult to know whether that's true or not, but certainly they regard it that way. And certainly it delays what was almost inevitably an opportunity to expand to include all of Greece, whether or not the Persians had intended it in that campaign. It was on the cards at some point, and this is a setback in that front.
So is it sort of like the Americans, how they view D-Day, like in the storming of Normandy, is like this moment where they kind of helped take for World War II, stave off the enemy?
Certainly people have key ideas about pivotal moments. And there's no doubt that for the Athenians, this was a pivotal moment that they saw that this was a turning point where it was demonstrated that they could turn back the Persians. And when it looked like defeat was inevitable, they snatched victory from its jaws.
And so how did this idea then of the battle, how did that sort of affect Athenian culture and history and philosophy?
Well, the battle happened at the beginning of a very dynamic period in Greek culture, when you have new genres of writing being developed, new social practices, art forms, and these have the memory of Marathon incorporated into them. So it really influences the development of history writing, drama, philosophy, rhetoric, giving of speeches, and it influences education in all of those fields as well. And so those writings, paintings, artwork, they end up then influencing every generation that followed over thousands of years after the battle. So that Marathon really earns itself a core place in the cultural life and education right across the ages. And if you want to make a point, then you can make that point better by including Marathon in some way about how you want to make that point. You find some way of making that relevant, and it gives it an extra kind of zip, if you like. If I thought about some examples, especially for the orators and for people who are studying classical oratory right across the ages, Marathon really symbolizes freedom, and it symbolizes the struggle for freedom against empire. And that was still true by the time that the Greeks are opposing the invasion of Macedon, when the Macedonians are conquering Greece, they call on Marathon. And it was still true hundreds of years later when the Greeks rise up and throw out the Ottoman Empire in the 19th century. They are still calling Marathon to mind as the symbol of what can be possible. But on the other hand, it means different things to different people. So not long after the battle, the Athenians bring down one of the chief architects of the battle, the general Miltiades. And that's quite shocking that that happens. One moment he's a hero, he has led this great victory or been one of the key figures in the victory, and he's been prosecuted within 5 minutes almost, and dies a very unhappy death. And so for some ancient philosophers, Marathon can symbolize the fickleness of democracy. It can symbolize how unreliable the crowd are, that it can turn on you so quickly. And in a way, I've told the long story of Marathon, how it means a lot over the centuries, but I've also tried to make it quite a personal one, in the sense that that general Miltiades, I mean, he's just a fascinating character. He lives this very interesting life. And I've tried to thread through the book the way that Marathon becomes an important story for his family, how they manage his reputation, how they manage their own reputation. So it's a family story in a way, as well as one of international significance.
Now, was he also being charged before the war as well? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I thought that he was unpopular beforehand as well, that he'd been with the Persian army, but please correct me if I'm wrong.
He's involved in two very difficult court cases. The first court case, to go back a step, you're right. He does work for the Persians at one point. He comes from this family that it's a significant family in Athens, but they live in a time when Athens is ruled by a tyrant. It becomes a little bit difficult there, and some of the family leave and they go to an area near Troy, the Chersonese, which is basically where Gallipoli was fought many years later. And they run the area, they are tyrants there quite successfully. When Persian Empire approaches, that means they need to do something about, they need to make a decision. They cannot defend themselves from the Persian Empire, and all the Greeks in that area basically end up joining the Persian forces, and Miltiades works for them. However, you may end up thinking he doesn't support them that enthusiastically, because eventually he flees the area and goes back to Athens with his family. What's fascinating about the family is that one of his sons comes back with him to Athens and later becomes one of the most significant figures of Greek opposition to the Persians. The other son, the eldest son, is captured by the Persians, and he becomes basically an honorary Persian and has a Persian family and lives the rest of his life as a Persian. Fascinating. However, for Miltiades, he arrives back in Athens thinking, thank goodness, I'm saved, and is straight away put on trial, because he might have left Athens when tyranny was okay. By the time he gets back, it's not. It's a new democracy. If you've been a tyrant, you are tarred with the tyrant's brush. So he's put on trial for tyranny. It must have been terrifying for his children, for the wider family. However, he just about survives that. And so he's not executed. He is basically cleared and is very quickly resuscitated and made general of his particular social group. Then he is surging to the top, becomes this very influential general. He is the senior general to survive the battle. The person actually in charge doesn't, so Miltiades kind of takes that spot. And then when they get back home, everyone says, well done, Miltiades, that was fantastic. And as far as the story goes, he then basically persuades the Athenian people that they should let him lead a campaign against one of the Greek islands. And exactly what goes on with that is a little bit unclear, but the campaign goes ahead and it is an absolute disaster. I mean, it's fascinating that it happens at all. Then, you know, they're attacking another Greek community so soon after all this talk about saving the Greeks, but they attack this Greek island. It's a total disaster. They come home and Miltiades is tried once again. This time the trial is for defrauding the people, because he's taken their money to lead this campaign and kit out all the ships, and it's, they've not got any loot to pay for that. So he's on trial. He will be executed if it goes badly. However, it goes badly in a different way. He's been injured on that campaign. He's too ill to defend himself. And although they vote that they will not execute him, he dies before he can be exonerated, basically. So he dies of gangrene, basically blood poisoning from this horrible injury that he's had. So he really dies in disgrace. And his family get whiplash from how rapidly this has gone up and down, up and down. And they are left in this really difficult position. The children are, his children are teenagers at that stage. And they really end up eventually having to work quite hard to rehabilitate the family and rebuild their reputation.
Well, it makes our current society's sort of fickleness with who's in favor and who is not look almost comparatively calm and orderly.
Yeah, I was going to say, you could think about it two ways. In some ways, it's quite distressing from the point of view that you think, my goodness, almost all of the key figures of the Persian Wars end up being brought down by their communities. And it does feel fickle, and it does feel, it can feel a little bit unjust. But on the other hand, this is a democracy saying we want accountability. We expect our people to do well. If we think they have done something wrong, then they should be brought to justice. And there's something quite inspiring about that. It just doesn't always feel that the balance is quite right as to where it falls. And that's really a matter of opinion as to how right or wrong they get it.
Well, and of course, they didn't have the benefit of hindsight. You know, we can look back 2000 years later and be like, well, you know, so, and at that time, you know, you can imagine how much information is available to everybody when they're making choices. I mean, you can't just judge everything on the latest Twitter feed or so it is a slightly different experience. But it makes me think, too, of like Alcibiades. I mean, there's a couple of other examples of that, you know, people going back and forth and, you know, with the Persians, not with the Persians. I also think of like Xenophon. I mean, it's just not so clear cut on who's where.
Yes, there's some interesting fluidity in this period. And Miltiades and his family are a great example of that, the way that you know who you are and what people you belong to, but there is still a fluidity, culturally speaking, and there is movement around different communities. And it's the same for the next wave of the Persian Wars as well. Themistocles, who plays such a big role in that, he ends up going to the Persians as well. At the end of the day, you've only got so many options, I suppose, if your own community casts you out. But at the same time, it does show some of the flexibility that is there.
So the idea of a battle is quite powerful. And it's interesting that you just mentioned Gallipoli before, like that's another one that sort of enshrined in more modern history, or I think today actually is the Independence Day of Texas, that everyone will in that region will remember the Alamo. There's a lot of kind of pivotal battles that usually it's the ones that they lose, it seems, become really important. But Marathon, they actually won. So I guess that's kind of different than a lot of the different kind of powerful concepts of battles that we can think of off the top of our head. But does the idea of the battle contrast greatly with the truth of the battle? Is that something we could even know?
Yeah, interesting question. Truth, yes, just such a slippery, subjective term. However, generally speaking, it's impossible to know what happened at the battle. It is very tricky to get to some of the key details. That said, we do know the gist of it. An invading army definitely got repulsed, and there is no good reason to doubt that the Athenians and Plataeans did achieve that. On the other hand, as for the truth, sometimes Marathon is represented as a battle of Greece versus Asia, sometimes even as Europe versus Asia. That's a half-truth. There are Greeks on both sides of that battle. So to try and make it clear-cut, you know, that's not really a reflection of reality. Same, it is often regarded as a battle of freedom and democracy versus empire. That's a half-truth as well. There is some truth in that. It is definitely about resisting empire. However, yes, it's a half-truth because the Athenians, they support imperialism, they support empire, they just want to be in charge of any empire. They don't want to be subject to somebody else's empire. So it's a question of how you interpret that idea of what empire or imperialism is about. In the modern age, we hear quite a bit about the marathon run and running marathons and how that became the origin of the marathon that we have today. That is another half-truth, really. It's the idea, the story that is generally told about the marathon run in the modern age that has a closest connection to a tradition in the Victorian age, the 19th century. It's still true to say that running is important in the ancient tradition, but that aspect of the battle has been changed a great deal over time as well, and it has quite a complicated history of how those different traditions developed over the years. So there is some truth in it, and there is some other elements as well. I suppose you could say there are truths that are literally true and truths that are more figuratively true. As for anything else, the ideas of the battle, I mean, they often focus on the glory of fighting, the glory of dying for your home. And that's quite a powerful thing for people. And I have no objection to the idea of it being used for that purpose. But I have also tried to show another angle of the truth of the battle. And I've written a chapter called Surviving Marathon. And that looks at the kind of wounds people get, the kind of injuries, medical practices, disposal of the dead. You know, there is a glamorous side to warfare and to battle, but it's also true to say that it's a pretty nasty business. And I think it's important to be frank about that side of things as well.
Yeah, I once did an entire podcast about the archaic war dead in ancient Greece. And it was very niche, but very fascinating. You know, and like you say, there's, you know, the actual battle is usually sort of like the tip of an iceberg when it comes to a war and a campaign. And you know, there's the glamorous side, but there's also, you know, like, as you said, the death and the wounds, but there's also the support campaigns and getting resources. And there's all the sort of other elements of it that might seem less exciting, but are absolutely essential. If you don't get your food train there, you're going to be in a very difficult situation with regards to your soldiers and, you know, these kind of implications. But with regards to this idea of dying for your country and using marathon in speech and using it as in popular culture, was it ever used for very nefarious purposes or for propaganda?
Great question again. Yes. And the answer is absolutely. Yes, definitely. having said that, again, that largely depends on your point of view, on your perspective on various situations. Very soon, the Athenians themselves were making use of Marathon to lord it over the other Greeks. And it becomes a strong theme of them saying to the other Greeks, we did marathon, you owe us, we should be in charge. And there is no doubt that it's propaganda, whether you want to say that it's nefarious. Again, the Athenians would say it was reasonable. Other people would say something else, perhaps. Or rather, most Athenians would say that, not all of them. There is an ideological struggle between those who think that Marathon symbolizes Athenian supremacy and those who want it to be more of a rallying cry for Pan-Hellenic action against the Persians. So you already get a little bit of a split opinion about it. And this becomes the kind of thing that happens right across the ages. People will associate it with different conflicts or different perspectives on different conflicts. If we take much later, then pretty much everybody involved in the Napoleonic Wars, they regard themselves as the heirs to Marathon. And again, you know, you can kind of make of that what you will, that you have these conflicting sides, but they have their own interpretation of how they fit into the wider story of history. It's fair to say that some histories of the battle and the way it's written or the way it's referenced, they can be sometimes quite racist. You get, again, this idea of purely good democratic Europeans against the idea of bad tyrannical Asians in quite a blunt contrast. And again, it doesn't really reflect the contrast. It doesn't really reflect the reality of what went on. It's much more complicated, much more nuanced. And again, I've tried to tell the story in a slightly different way. I did end up writing about the rise of Nazism and racist Aryan ideology. But what's so, again, so curious is that that really grew out of a tradition in which Europeans and Iranians were grouped together in opposition to other people. So things aren't always what they seem. The battle can be used again in different formulations. It has this ability to be elastic depending on what you want to associate it with. A more clear-cut case, I suppose, would be in the 1960s in Greece. There was a military dictatorship known as the Colonels, and they used Marathon to promote themselves, to promote their regime. But again, it was not accepted 100%, and the wider population of Greece did not really get on board with what the Colonels had to say, and they were eventually brought down as their leadership was eventually brought down.
It's amazing that the Battle of Marathon, it's almost like a good metaphor for like the classics in general, you know. Then people use it for different purposes at different times, some good, some bad, some really bad, and but it exists separate to how it has been employed. I mean, it is a moment in time, but that the idea of it can sometimes take a very different route depending on who's using it and how it's used.
Yes, that's definitely fair.
It's one thing I'd like to ask about a little bit too is the relationship between Athens and Sparta with regards to the Battle of Marathon, because I know Sparta isn't involved, and that's kind of a big deal.
It is. The Athenians are not hugely popular around the time of the battle, so it's not surprising that some of their neighbours don't join them. And the Plataeans do, which is charming. The Spartans are tempted. It puts them in a difficult position. On the one hand, they have been really showing quite strong opposition to Persia for quite some time. There are ways in which they are interested in Eastern culture and will adopt elements of Eastern culture into their own. They are very, very sure that they do not want Greece or Sparta to actually become part of the Persian Empire. So they do think about going. In the end, they do not send the whole army, but they do send some people. And they didn't have to do that if they didn't want to. But they send this relatively small contingent, and they must have moved really, really fast to get there. And they do turn up, but they turn up just after the battle. But they did turn up. And what I think is quite wonderful is they go to Athens, hear that they're too late, but they still go to the battlefield for a look. But it's all over. So once they've had a look, they go home. Yes, it has a big influence in what comes later. It's an opportunity for the Athenians to show their usefulness to the rest of the Greeks and to demonstrate or remind people of their military power. The Spartans had undoubtedly been the major power up to that point, and it gives the Athenians an opportunity to say, you were the major power, you did nothing, it was us who did something, we saved all of the Greeks. And they keep reminding Sparta of that at every opportunity. And so you have this idea that this is, there is an idea really of this is an opportunity for the Athenians to expand their reputation amongst the other Greeks. Once Sparta is almost destroyed a few hundred years later, the Athenians can talk about it differently and they will be more sympathetic to the Spartans' position and they talk about it a little bit less harshly. But when things are tense between the Athenians and the Spartans, yes, it's a good opportunity for the Athenians to say, we were there, where were you?
Yeah. And then they're like, this is one we won. And I guess that kind of says to why the idea of it is perpetuated so much, because it really does boost the Athenian standing. It's very much part of their narrative. And, you know, for better or worse, our history is sort of more written by the Athenians than any of the other city states. So the fact that this particular battle, which is where Athens is the champions, is maybe not so surprising that it kind of lives through the ages a bit more. And I wanted to ask about some of maybe the smaller casualties along the way leading up to the Battle of Marathon, which I thought was of the island of Miletus, the birthplace of Thales, and which was destroyed and the women and children enslaved and the men expelled. And that was a very pivotal moment beforehand, but how did that affect the rest of that invasion?
Oh, it must have been absolutely terrifying. That is, it's a very serious town, cosmopolitan, wealthy, splendid, and they really, you know, that city is destroyed. The population is destroyed. It's a really bad business, and it influences even the development of drama, because a playwright in Athens writes in this new genre, writes a play, and it's a play that includes elements of what might be called current events, talking about what had happened in the fall of that city. And the population of Athens is so distressed by this play that the playwright is fined. And it becomes very unusual to write about historical events in dramas after that. Yes, everyone knows about what's happened in the Mediterranean world. They know what's happened there. And everybody knows that if you stand up to the Persian army, that's what will happen. You know, this is how empires tend to operate. They either are kind to people who just let them walk all over them, or they punish people who try to resist them. And so in Athens, there is this consciousness that this is what could happen to them if they resist, which makes it more remarkable that they decided to try and resist nonetheless. And whatever you think about it, there's no denying that was a brave decision. And yes, it was a brave decision, no doubt about it. You can be enslaved, your walls can be brought down, you lose your goods, your gods' temples are trashed and new people will worship them there. It can be bad.
It did make me wonder why, in some ways, that invasion and destruction of Miletus would not have been the rally cry and had the idea that would perpetuate, like I was saying with Gallipoli or Alamo or other battles that were failures but motivated other people into action.
Well, yes, an interesting question. I think it's because people on the mainland had been tempted in that way. You know, the Athenians and some of the others do go over and try and help the Greeks in Asia. Doesn't go that well, and they end up leaving. And the Spartans were never that keen on it. They'd had their own go. They tried to rescue Samos in some earlier years, disaster. And after that, they're not that keen on going over there. So I think even though it's not that far across the water, I think there's a case of, it puts them on notice that this is very serious. But once the city has fallen, I mean, what are they going to do? You know, they're not going to go over there and try and do something about it.
Yeah, and I guess the Athenians, as I was saying before, I mean, they ended up becoming the ones who were writing history, more or less. So they're going to talk about where they won, not maybe anybody else.
Although finally, of course, it ends up in one of the main histories. So we know about it because of Herodotus of Halicarnassus in Asia Minor. He'll have been close to all of that stuff as well. It will have been part of his family traditions and the traditions of other people in the towns that he knew there, as well as when he went to Athens. And he does talk about that as it's through him that we know this story about what happened with the dramatists in Athens. It's through him that we get this description of what happened. Although it is evident in the archaeology as well, it's through him that we know about it. But yes, there is much more focus on the more successful stories later on. And well, simply from the point of view of many practical aspects, you know, it made sense for them to hope things might stop there. But as it happened, though, the Persian army or the Persian forces put together this phenomenal fleet and sail across the Aegean. And there's no ignoring that.
One of the main purposes of what we try to do at Classical Wisdom is to sort of show the relevance of studying ancient history, that it can help sort of make sense of what's going on in the world and help us understand what's going on. And, you know, of course, you always have to be very careful when trying to make comparisons and you know, there's gentle footing involved on that. But how does studying ancient battles, both with regards to the actual events and also their perception, and I think it's really an excellent observation of how important the idea of a battle can be and how it's perceived, both for good or bad reasons, help us understand our current situation? Because there are quite a few huge movements of war and battles happening, you know, the end of Afghanistan, the beginning here in Russia and Ukraine. Is there anything from these ancient battles that can help us understand our modern world?
Well, in the same way, I would like to be, I hope, sensitive about the seriousness of what people are going through at the moment. That said, it's been the way over many centuries that people who are facing invasion, facing a great power, they have often taken a lot of inspiration from earlier battles, from earlier precedents of success, when you can look back and think they went through something like what we're going through and they managed it, or this happened or that happened. And Marathon has really been an important inspiration to many people in those situations right across the centuries. And I think that, yes, I think I'd agree that it's often where the idea of something can become so powerful. And famous ancient battles can, in a way, provide a means of processing or articulating what is happening in the present when the present can seem so overwhelming and the factors are so different. But again, there are these elements of similarity that people can sometimes call on. In fact, President Zelensky recently did exactly that. And he had a press conference, and you might have heard he said that he doesn't want this conflict to be 300 Spartans. He wants peace. And it was a great line. And it really evoked all the heroic struggle that is commonly associated with Greece's defense against the Persian Empire. And that brings glory to Ukraine's defenders. But understandably, of course, he's put his own slant on it. And you can do that with ancient battles as well. You can say what you want to be the same. You can say what you want to be different. And in his case, he said they want victory and peace, and they'd rather not have the self-sacrifice element of it. And I think ultimately the matter comes down to what moments, what memories of a conflict are passed on, and what the messages of that conflict are used to communicate. What will people say of it in 1,000 years, 3,000 years? You know, who knows at this stage?
Yeah, it's interesting to think that you have these situations where you have much smaller armies against much larger forces. And I think there's always something very inspirational to people to the underdog, the little guy can manage. And with the Battle of Thermopylae, obviously they didn't survive that battle, but it did still obviously was a great cause for enabling the rest of the Greek army to get ready to be able to repel the Persians afterwards. But the Battle of Marathon, they did. So if anything, we should be writing and saying, no, you don't need to be the Battle of Thermopylae. You can be the Battle of Marathon. This is where you should get your inspiration.
It would be a more encouraging example. Yes. That happened. If we went back a few hundred years, the Battle of Waterloo becomes quite associated with Marathon for that same kind of reason. I mean, you could say the defenders in that case weren't facing quite the same kind of war engine, a war machine, but they still felt that way, and there's still an idea of defence. Thermopylae does loom larger in the popular imagination, I think. So I think it often is more of a sort of go-to. It's more of a go-to example, but at the same time, yes, Marathon is definitely a much more encouraging example.
This is why we have to get the idea of Marathon out, you know, to help bring inspiration. Now, you've just mentioned a few different battles: the Battle of Thermopylae, the Battle of Waterloo. We mentioned Gallipoli. We've mentioned, so many different battles now. As I've mentioned to you before, I've been working a lot on the Battle of Actium. And so these are a lot of battles that are sort of considered great or memorable or inspirational. And it was something that beforehand we were sort of asking, what does make a great battle? What makes a battle for the ages?
Yes, it is an interesting question, isn't it? I suppose I would initially want to distinguish between great meaning good and great meaning significant. And I think many people would probably agree that no battles are great meaning good. Bad things happen. Generally, it would be better if you could avoid battles. But realistically, they are sometimes necessary. And then perhaps they can be said to be great when they truly are significant, when they make a big impact. But that can be an impact politically, socially, culturally. There are different ways in which battles can make a big impact. The Battle of Marathon, that influenced the political balance right across the Mediterranean world, beyond. And that in itself, I would say, makes it significant. It's also a tremendous logistical feat. The Persians getting their army into that situation, that in itself is very impressive. And then you have this great show of bravery from the Athenians and the Plataeans. And I think those factors give it a greatness as well. The sheer logistical effort involved, the sheer personal courage involved. More importantly, it influenced how so many generations thought about their own lives and their values afterwards. And again, it helps people to articulate what they regard as important over the centuries. And that's all over the world as well. And in that sense, the battle really becomes part of the human fabric of how people talk about the world, their experience of life. And in that sense, that I think makes Marathon a great battle.
And just to finalize and to finish up, because I think this is a great battle, and there's so much to learn from it. And I love the idea of it, you know, hopefully becoming an inspiration and continuing to live in popular culture and to give the Battle of Thermopylae a run for its money. What would you say is the sort of the most important lesson learned from the Battle of Marathon? Like, that it's a virtue that people can gain from studying its actuality?
For me, it's still that a battle can mean different things to different people. I think studying history, that's one of the key ideas that we can grow from. The events themselves, hugely important, particularly to one side more than the other, but important to both sides. But this idea that there's no automatic sense of what happens next, I think that's the key element that Marathon offers us. It yes, the behavior of the Athenians and the Plataeans on that day, their bravery is very inspirational. And to be fair, the Persians and others who fight on their side, they show a lot of bravery as well. I mean, it's a very frightening situation. But yes, I think for me, the key element of Marathon is the sheer flexibility of what people decide to use the battle to teach, whether it's the values of the importance of the gods, whether it's about the virtues of democracy or the foibles of democracy. Some people even use it to use as an example of what great animals dogs are and how reliable they are. Some people want to use it to teach this and that. You know, it really can be used for so many different things. It means different things at different times to different people. And in that sense, I think it's a great example of what history means to people in the present, whenever their present happens to be.
Well, that's very well said. It's like a look into the role of history itself.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much. I think that's a great place to end. And I think it's very, very interesting. And I hope everybody can get their hands on The Idea of Marathon. I will put a link below so you can read it yourself and get to understand a bit of this battle and its huge legacy.
Super. Thanks very much.